I've actually seen music producers that craft sigils into the waveform of the actual song. The structure of the song and the way the notes and the different tracks are laid out will literally create sigils or certain symbols when you look at it all zoomed out. I'm just making the point that like music is frequency, everything is frequency, and your biology tends to adjust itself to be in resonance with the frequency around it.
Welcome to the Cosmic Keys Podcast. This is going to be your episode for October 14th to the 20th, 2019, and it is my birthday week. Woot! So definitely you're going to want to listen to this episode. We're going to have a great interview with Chance Garten. He is the host of a really fun podcast called the Innerverse Podcast. So you're definitely going to want to stay tuned for that. But before we get into that, we have to talk about our last week because we had a lot of gnarly stuff going on, as Dan would say. And we also had the Wheel of Fortune card too. So Dan, how was your last week?
Well, the Wheel of Fortune, definitely, I was feeling it for sure. Like, God, it was sort of just like one good thing, then one bad thing. One good thing, then one bad thing. Like, and some of the good things were really good. I mean, like, the tables really turned in some ways, but then there were all these stupid little, like, bad luck things, like getting parking tickets, forgetting stuff, like traffic. I mean, I guess it was all minor, but yeah, lots of up and down, good, bad. I really felt like I was spinning. And, you know, the Wheel of Fortune makes me think of like gambling because it's, I think of like a casino or like, you know, like a slot machine and like all the bells and like jingles that come with it. So it kept making me think of like gambling addiction. So it was actually making me think of the devil card a lot. I was like, oh, this is like a dopamine rush, like playing this like gambling style of living, but
it's the universe playing that with our souls.
Yeah. But how about you? How was your Wheel of Fortune week?
So like you, I had a lot of kind of ups and downs on both ends. And then yesterday I had a total Wheel of Fortune moment. So my mom called me out of the blue and she's like, okay, someone just drove their car into my apartment.
What?
So she's okay. She was at work, but her dog was there. The dog's fine, thank goodness. But some lady just drove her car, thought she was hitting the brakes, but actually hit the accelerator into my mom's living room.
Wow.
And then backed up and hit another apartment.
Jesus.
Apparently she wasn't drunk, but I don't know about that one.
Was she elderly?
No, she was just like some lady, I don't know.
The common brake instead of accelerator mistake.
Right. So it was, yeah, it was like, good luck she wasn't in the house. Bad luck her living room's destroyed.
Well, is she going to get like a fat insurance check now?
Yeah, I think they're still working out all the details and she's renting. So like they have to do all the fixing and it's, you know, not going to fall on her or anything. But it was just like the most random call out of the blue. Was not expecting that. So very much a Wheel of Fortune week.
Yeah, that is crazy. Wow. Well, so for this week, we have to pull a tarot card. And
yeah, and we've had a lot of fun cards lately. I feel like, you know, now that we're in Libra season, we should be expecting some swords soon, it being an air sign. But we haven't had swords in like forever.
Well, the swords tarot cards are, I mean, I don't think of them as Libran. I think of the justice card as Libra, but swords I think of as just gnarly.
Well, the two of swords, it's about indecision, and that's very right. Much a Libra thing. But yeah, I mean, they do tend to be pretty dramatic, a lot of them, a lot of conflict cards, but also a lot of ones kind of associated with intelligence and the mind and anxiety on kind of the more negative spectrum for that. But yeah, so.
Well, this is the last week of Libra season this upcoming week. So enjoy it before Scorpio takes over.
And I'm really starting to feel the darkness coming in too.
Yeah, me too. Today is very wet and gloomy and easy to like stay in bed all morning. But a lot of Scorpio season in Chicago is kind of like that. And it is a water sign. So it's Scorpio and Pisces are kind of similar weather-wise, at least here.
Mm-hmm. Well, are we ready to see the card of the week?
I'm nervous.
Ace of Cups.
Yeah!
Woo, this is a good one. That's so funny. You're just like, it's going to be the beginning soon of Scorpio season.
Yeah.
So we were just talking about water, and aces are, of course, beginnings. So the Ace of Cups is a really good card, in my view. So in the image, you have this like hand coming out of the clouds, and it's offering you this grail-like cup. And water is kind of like flowing out of it, kind of like a fountain. You have some nice water lilies below. It's a very peaceful image. There's some kind of interesting Christian symbolism going on. Looks kind of communion-like in some of the symbolic history of the card. But in general, with all of the aces, you're talking about new beginnings. So this is really kind of the start of a new season, a new cycle, a new feeling. And because it's cups, it's going to be emotion. It's going to be relationships. So for our listeners, this would be a really good week to start a new relationship with someone, potentially. Mm. It can also represent creative projects. So it can also be a good time to start a new creative endeavor, or just to start reconnecting more with other people in your life and dedicating a lot of energy towards that. So overall, it's a pretty good card. Beginnings of new relationships, beginnings of new creative projects. Definitely an emotional rush of energy, I would say. So you're going to feel really inspired. And because it's beginnings, it might like kick you out of like a bit of a rut that you've been in.
Which I've been in.
So this could be good. I'm feeling pretty positive. I'm glad our friend the devil didn't show up again. I was a bit worried about that.
Yeah.
So we got a good card this week. What do we have going on for astrology?
For astrology, the beginning of, so we're coming off the weekend of the Aries full moon that was a bit gnarly. That moon was, the sun squared Saturn the beginning of last week. And then, as any planets right now moving through Libra, they're first going to square Saturn in the south node, and then eventually they're going to square Pluto. The Aries full moon that happened Sunday was very close to making an exact square with Pluto, the sun. And by Monday morning at 3:38 a.m., the sun will go exact and square Pluto on Monday. So Monday is going to be the hangover from the Sunday drama and everything. When the sun, this with the sun being your ego and your identity, squaring Pluto, Pluto is the planet of transformation, which is transformation is rough and ugly and difficult a lot of times and painful. You think of the drama of like coming through the birth canal, like being reborn, being born. It is the process of birth is gnarly. So Monday morning, be careful. And honestly, you won't be hearing this then, but Sunday night into Monday morning is kind of rough. We're going to be kicking the week off with the moon just starting to wane. But the moon is in Taurus. The moon does well in Taurus. Another thing happening Monday, very early in the morning, Mercury is going to sextile Saturn. So that can give you some mental clarity Sunday night, Monday morning. Mercury being the planet of your intellect, and Saturn being like the constrictor or the sharpener of things. So, Sun square Pluto, difficult. Mercury sextile Saturn, probably helpful. And then the last thing on Monday, just be careful. The moon will conjunct Uranus at 10:29 p.m. Eastern. So that's more of the kind of like last week, the Wheel of Fortune chaos that is sticking around for Monday's activities. Tuesday, we still got the moon in Taurus on Tuesday. We have another creative and I think Ace of Cups type of alignment happening between Mercury in Scorpio trining Neptune in Pisces. So Scorpio and Pisces are both water signs, just like the Ace of Cups. Mercury in Scorpio is your intellect, and Neptune in Pisces is the outer planet of creativity, spirituality, visions, dreams, fantasies. So I think Tuesday would be a great day for like mentally intensive creative projects, because Neptune really is inspiration and vision in a lot of ways. So, and Mercury in Scorpio will take your mind into the depths, and Neptune in Pisces will like give you clear psychedelic vision for all of that. So yeah, it, like to tap into the Ace of Cups energy, Tuesday definitely stands out as a good day for that. Wednesday, the moon later at 10:30 p.m. moves out of Taurus into Gemini. Nothing really to go over those days. And then by Saturday, Mercury will sextile Pluto. So Mercury sextiled Saturn earlier in the week and is sextiling Pluto by Saturday. So it seems this week we've got some Mercury stuff happening, you know, and this is Mercury in Scorpio. And I believe, I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty positive Mercury will be entering its shadow period of retrograde this week. So yeah, I just paused it, and Mercury actually went into its shadow this past Saturday at 11 degrees Scorpio. And what it means when it goes in its shadow, basically on Halloween, Mercury is going to station retrograde at 27 degrees Scorpio. Then throughout November, he's going to move backwards through Scorpio until going direct on November 21st at 11 degrees Scorpio. So because this past Saturday, Mercury was at 11 degrees, that's where it's going to station direct eventually. So now that it's moving past that 11 degrees mark, that means that Mercury is in its shadow. And I don't know about you, Scarlett, but I was feeling some Mercury retrograde-esque stuff this past Wednesday when we were recording, and I was supposed to be on another show, and that all got screwed up, but...
Yeah, we have been having a lot of tech issues recently, so...
Including today. We're recording from one mic because the cord just, like, disassembled itself and broke, like, in my hands today.
So maybe that Mercury energy is pretty strong then.
Yeah, we have to, like, burn an effigy to Mercury or something. I don't know. But yeah, okay, back to the forecast. So, Saturday the 19th, Mercury sextiles Pluto. So in this, you know, shadow period... All of these aspects are going to happen a second time in November. So I guess take notes about how this Mercury stuff is affecting you. And then finally, on Sunday the 20th, we have love planet Venus making a sextile to Saturn. So this is kind of an easy little aspect to sort of like pick up the pieces of your relationship to like...
That sounds dark.
No, it's not dark. It's like repair little like nicks in your relationship, or like fix little mini problems, you know?
It's so like go to brunch with your partner on Sunday.
Yeah, it's Saturn in Capricorn, Venus in Scorpio. So like, you know, it's kind of like let's get some work done in our relationship in a sort of nonchalant way. So nothing to freak out about. With Venus sextile Saturn. So this week isn't too gnarly at all, except for like the hangover of a gnarly week last week. And the fact that we have the Ace of Cups is a good sign, because like the Ace of Cups energy, that's one of my favorite cards in general. I think it's probably because it looks super Catholic.
Well, it's got the little communion wafer that the white dove is holding in its beak.
Mm-hmm.
I love that on the cup itself, it looks like this weird W.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's with the lettering on that cup there?
So there's several theories. I personally like to think that the cup is meant to be drunk. So you're supposed to imagine if you were holding the cup in your hand and you were drinking from it, it would appear not as a W, but as an M, representing the magician. And that the hands that you see in each of the aces, they're always like coming out of the clouds. I kind of view those as the hands of the magician, because on the magician card at his altar table are the four representations. So this is kind of the magician's hand offering you this cup, offering you this new, fresh beginning. So I always like to think of it as symbolic of the magician. You're taking part in the drinking from the cup, turning that odd-looking W into an M for magician. But there's a lot of, you know, theories out there, so that's just the one I like to use. But
Does it have mini bells on the bottom too?
Yeah, it's kind of a fancy cup. It is very grail-like, I think, in imagery, and I think that's on purpose. But yeah, especially the Ace of Cups is a much fancier cup. Yeah. The Queen of Cups too. She's got a really fancy cup.
That looks like the Ark of the Covenant or something.
Yeah, so I think the Ace is kind of Holy Grail-like, and then the Queen of Cups, she's got the Ark of the Covenant-style cup.
Yeah, because that doesn't... The letter doesn't really look like a W. It looks like an upside-down M.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't think on this show we've... have we drawn an Ace of any of the suits?
I don't think so. Maybe not. Maybe this is our first Ace, but... I love aces. They tend to be, for me, a really positive presence whenever I get one.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds me of like what I was saying with the Wheel of Fortune reminding me of gambling. Like when we pulled this one, the ace is like one of those dopamine rush good cards. You're like, yeah, the ace. Because it's like, it looks, I just love the aces. Good too, because yeah, this past week, been a little emo. Little Ace of Cups reversed this past few days, so.
Yeah, so hopefully things will balance out for this week, and you'll have to tell us all on Instagram. We want to hear from you guys on your feedback on if you're feeling the card of the week, if you're not feeling the card of the week, or the astrology. Let us know.
Yeah, and for the following episode, we were talking with Chance Garten of the Interverse podcast for a while. We got a long conversation in, and if you guys like hearing long conversations with all of the like most controversial content, that's what our patrons get by joining our Patreon.
Yeah, we save the most juicy stuff for them.
I mean, honestly, because like you don't know what these algorithms, you don't know who's going to be pissed off about what you really think. So I guess you can learn more about our real opinions by getting the uncensored extended version of our Patreon. And, you know, we've had the Patreon for a while and we pretty consistently had like an extra, you know, depending on who it is, we've had a good 20 to 30 minute extension per episode of more content. But now we're starting to like have longer Patreon extensions, and we have some special surprise episodes coming up that are actually Halloween themed. And just a little heads up, the Patreon people are going to get like a lot of extra content in that case. But yeah, in general, just joining Patreon is the way that we keep this ship running, and it really helps us out, and we want to keep growing and everything. So if you want to check that out, just go to patreon.com/cosmickeys.
Yeah, and stay tuned because we have a really fun interview coming up with Chance.
So on today's episode of Cosmic Keys, we are pleased to be speaking with Chance Garten, who is the host of a really great podcast called the Innerverse Podcast. I think I discovered Innerverse through Instagram, I want to say, but I've been listening to it kind of since early on when we started our show, and Chance has a lot of really interesting guests on his show and really broad subject matter that sort of is like the consciousness community. Chance goes to a lot of festivals, so it has a lot of the festival culture with like artists, visual artists, yoga instructors, you know, people like that are into that world. So I'm really excited to be chatting with Chance today and seeing where our world and his world intersects. So welcome to Cosmic Keys, Chance. How you doing today?
Really glad to be here. I think you guys have an awesome show, and I've checked out a few episodes as I have time. I, as you mentioned, have many varied interests. So when it comes to taking in content, I like to get astrology in there for sure. So your forecasts have been really neat. And like you said, we probably connected on Instagram. That makes me glad to know that all the time spent in the Instagram trenches had some payoff there, because it's great connecting with you guys. And yeah, you mentioned my show Innerverse, that it does kind of start off as like a festy fam type community show, because I have a lot of guests on that are people I meet personally while I'm out at events and doing things. The underlying goal of the podcast was to highlight creators who have found a way to live their life's or their soul's purpose for life in a way that breaks them out of the matrix, 9-to-5, rat race, repetition type of thing. Or if they do have a structured discipline in life, it is one of their own creation and choosing, where at the end of the day, I'm most interested in people that have found a way to be their own master as much as possible and express the foundational philosophy that I hold to be true, that I've experienced to be true, which is that freedom actually is a function of your level of self-mastery or self-knowledge. But that might have been a long-winded answer to whatever question you kicked me off with.
No, that's super interesting. Were you always like that? Did you always have this kind of interest in philosophy or spirituality, or kind of finding your own way? Or was there an event that happened that kind of kicked you off, as you call it, the matrix, and started you down this path?
I think it's a series of events that all kind of add up to put cracks into the armoring of the superficial or false ego persona that we all get installed in us as children. For me, the false ego persona had to do with religion, which is pretty common. I'm from Missouri, Southwest Missouri. Started off as a kid being taken to a Baptist church. I wanted to be a good boy. I always want to be praised, and I always want to be good. So I really put myself into trying to figure out that whole Christianity thing from the perspective that was being given to me by church people and my parents. And ultimately, my parents didn't even really understand the kind of things they were teaching us in Sunday school. Otherwise, they might have not even wanted to keep me there, because they weren't exactly, totally strict, dogmatic types of Christians. My mom in particular is very open and accepting and loving. And luckily, I was able to help them shift out of a more judgmental type of church crowd to a different church that was, I guess, Methodist and a lot more love-oriented and service-oriented. And that was cool, but it didn't really jive for me. I mean, I read the Bible at least twice before the time I was 14, like cover to cover. And I would try to talk to my elders or peers about it in church or my parents. And, you know, I'd have a lot of questions like, why are we being told that it's okay to kill people in certain contexts? Like, why is all this dark shit in here? And usually what would happen is whoever I was trying to talk to about it wouldn't even be familiar with the thing I was talking about, or they hadn't even read much of the scripture at all. And so that really caused me to put the whole actually taking it seriously thing on hold. And later in my teenage years, it unfortunately became more of a mask that I wore, that like, yeah, I go to church, I'm with you guys here, you know, but really all I was interested in was playing in the church band, playing guitar, playing bass, and, you know, girls, because I was a teenager and there's lots of girls at church. But by the time I was 17, I saw this movie Zeitgeist, and that was a pretty pivotal moment. It's very famous around 2006, 2007. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but eventually it came very clear after I watched that movie and started looking into things for myself that, yeah, this entire thing that we have going on with Christianity is actually astrotheology, and that's been around in various forms forever. It doesn't necessarily make the philosophy involved untrue, but it does mean that it's time to completely reject taking the dogmatic narrative of the Christian faith as like a literal true thing, a historically true thing. And that left me drifting for quite a while. One of the things that made, I guess, life seem so oppressive and depressing was because of getting into Zeitgeist. That movie also has a lot to do with like the economic system and how essentially humanity is enslaved to a small group that controls the world through banking and finances and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, that was also a little hard to take, and it felt like impossible to do anything about. It felt like, what's the point? So anyway, fast forward a little bit, and I was at probably my lowest point personally ever. And I was pretty close to getting like kicked out of school. I didn't even manage to schedule for classes at the university I was going to in time, and I ended up only being able to get into two classes. So I'm in this semester where I don't really have much of a job. I've got two classes to go to, and that's it. I'm kind of overweight. But the classes ended up being incredible, like the best things I took the entire time I was in school. And it was just almost like this weird helping hand from the universe. So the first class was about mindfulness meditation, and it's very simple. It was like the easiest class ever. You meditate in class, guided meditations, and then there were short writing exercises in the class. And outside of that, all you had to do for homework was have a daily writing practice of just even a few sentences a day, and to share that to the teacher. So the whole point of the class was to get you introduced to meditation and get you introduced to the idea of daily practices and doing things in, you know, small bite-sized chunks, but with consistency. And that somehow got into my head, and I kept meditating after that class. But just during the time of that class, I started being less stressed. I started losing weight without even like changing my diet. I didn't really change my diet till much later in the spiritual journey, but it was remarkable. And at the same time, there was a class, the second class I was in was called Writing the Spiritual Journey with an awesome professor named Scott Cairns. And the whole point was to get you contemplating what you think about life, the universe, and everything. And this opened a door in my mind that I had slammed shut because of rejecting Christianity. And I started to contemplate the deeper meaning of things and what I really thought about things. And that never ended. That questioning never ended once he kicked me off. So I have a lot of gratitude to both of the teachers that I had at that time, because from then on, I was never the same. It took a long time for me to shed a lot of the extra layers of the shell, but eventually I did get drugged to a music festival with some friends and got a little bit of a psychedelic awakening as well. And my entire paradigm was definitely shattered at that point, because as I had been exploring on an intellectual level questions of consciousness since that spirituality class, getting thrown into such a high vibing environment and then adding certain psychedelics into the mix, it really showed me that, yeah, there is a lot more going on metaphysically than what most people take for granted. Things like, you know, psychic connection and incredible odds-defying synchronicity. That type of stuff is really common in the festival world, and I think that's what gets people so drawn to it. I mean, there's a good chunk of individuals that go there just for a party, but overall, the more time you spend, if you're going to the right festivals with communities that are geared this way, it's going to rub off on you that you're going to become more interested in spiritual questions. You're going to be more interested in art. You're going to take music seriously as something important in your life. And for me, I mean, on the subject of music, I've realized that if I don't listen to new music, I don't change very much. So I like to mix it up between things that I love and classic types of songs to myself, but also constantly exploring and finding new sounds. And that's a great element of music festival culture as well. So after my first music festival, I kind of came back a really different person. I almost think that when you do psychedelics, it opens you up to the multiverse and you can maybe go through some sort of inner portal and come out in an alternate reality timeline where the probabilities are different and you have a different life from that point on. But, you know, that's kind of subjective and unprovable, but for me, it was definitely true. And I started getting into drawing and remembering how much I loved that. After a few years of being enmeshed in this community, I started having more and more deep spiritual experiences and conversations. I realized that I had a capacity for energy work, energy healing, that was kind of demonstrated to me by, for lack of a better word, being communicated with by crystals. And crystals are a big part of the festival community. Any vending booths that you see down the Shakedown Street of any festival, music festival around the country, there's going to be half of the vendors there have something to do with crystals going on. So there's just a lot of high vibrational, but densely packed high vibrational energy in these little bubbles of humanity that come up. And it wasn't too long, I guess, maybe just a couple of years of being in that community and getting into a lot of different podcasts as I was exploring my new spiritual curiosity and metaphysical curiosity and conspiratorial curiosity. And I just really love talking to people. It's always been something that I've been particularly gifted at as a hype man, you could call it, the Enneagram. I'm a 7. So ever since I was a kid, whatever thing I found interesting, I would just not shut up talking to my friends or family's ear off about it. It only makes sense that I would eventually start creating a podcast on my own. And that's sort of what I did. I wanted to bring, like I said before, the wisdom that is in anybody's creative path and their life journey and bring it to a larger group of people than they might be able to reach. Or if they express themselves through a medium like music or paint, to give them a chance to express themselves through a conversation and show a side of themselves that maybe their fans haven't heard before, and give them a comfortable place to open up about some of the things that generally they might not talk about to anyone because they don't want to be seen as odd or crazy. But that's exactly the type of stuff I like to get into, the weirdness of the expanded consciousness experience that I think everybody has, but only some of us accept and even fewer of us explore and try to compare notes with each other about.
Yeah, a couple things really kind of came to my mind as you were talking. One thing being the whole aspect of having a psychedelic experience really being a transformation point. And that's something we've heard from a lot of people. We've done episodes where we've talked a bit about psychedelics in the past. And it seems like the world as a whole is starting to open up to psychedelics more recently and their uses in curing things like depression even. So that's neat. And I like the way you kind of described it as you have the intellectual philosophical approach, but then you have this kind of deep uncovering psychedelic experience, kind of two sides of the same coin there towards that kind of awakening coming into being. So I think that's kind of neat. And the whole festival stuff is very fascinating to me as well, because I haven't been too many music festivals, but the ones that I have been to, I totally get what you're talking about, like the vibe, the community feeling. It does really seem like a bit of a different world when you're there.
Yeah, the creativity just explodes in some festivals, from things like stage design to, like, good festivals will have a dozen or more painters near the stage just feeding off of the energy of the crowd and creating incredible things right there in person. And I can't get enough of that.
Yeah, I can relate to a lot of what you were just describing too. Like, I feel like how old are you, Chance, by the way? I have to like zoom in on these age demographics.
I wanted to ask you guys the same thing. I'm 30.
Okay.
Oh, me too. When's your birthday?
March 22nd.
Oh my goodness. Okay, yeah, I'm October 17th.
So wait, were you born on the equinox?
I'm right there on that cusp. The 22nd makes me, it's an interesting place astrologically, if you ask me. I think from what I've read, it's considered the most fortunate or luckiest of the possible sign areas, but that's at least that's held to be true for me, right on the border between Aries and Pisces on the Aries side. So just coming off of that ending and into a very fresh and bright springtime new beginning. What I like about astrology is that when I look at the attributes of myself in the terms of a chart, this is like if I had created a Dungeons and Dragons character and I was picking all of the different components of the character and writing them down on a sheet, this is the character I would have made if I was like making a character to play the game of life. So
that's I feel the same way
thing about astrology to me.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, you're roughly the same age as us. Like I'm 32, Scarlett's 30, you're 30. And it's, you know, I keep driving home that us millennials, especially us like slightly older millennials, like we've seen some shit. And even, even like when, I mean, it's just crazy how it's kind of like a red pilling thing when you're like, I can recall that when I was a teenager, you know, I lived in the suburbs of Chicago and could just take the train to the city. So I wasn't really going to festivals until more of my college years. But when I was a teenager, I was going to, you know, the shakedown streets and the parking lots and having this contained psychedelic experience and then like taking the train home, like coming down and then like going home to my parents' house and like getting away with it. But then I recall like going online and seeing the early conspiracies, which, you know, that was like sort of the early internet too. And then and then you enter college. Those years are really like formative, and it's just kind of, I don't want to say it sucks that I got red pilled so early, but it's like, God,
what do you mean by red pill? Because just as I always get so confused, because when I hear red pill, I feel like it's just about relationships. It's like the men's rights thing. Is it something more than that?
Oh man.
Well, it could mean a lot of things.
We should all answer this in our own way.
The way I would answer that is just on the basic level of, you know, if you take the blue pill, you're asleep. If you take the red pill, you're awake. Like right. You're awake to the truth, or you're out of the matrix. And I just mean like, you know, you wake up to like the fantasy of the world around you. I don't mean red pill in like a political way, but I just mean like
waking up from the matrix.
Waking up from the matrix. And like, so like, I'm just saying, I guess I might have been in the matrix when I was like a kid or whatever and didn't know anything anyways. But when I was a teenager, from the get-go, I was like, trust no one. This is all fake.
Well, now we hear like, hey, we might be living in a simulation. So maybe you think you've escaped it, but we're all stuck still.
But knows? Chance, what do you think about the term red pill for yourself?
I think it's a continual process. It's like you wake up in the morning and I'm like, I'm going to take the red pill today again. I'm not, because you could re-blue pill yourself, so to speak. I imagine that people can, you know, have an extended consciousness experience and then reject it and then go back into a form of limited materialism experience of life. There's all kinds of examples of that in fringe lore, like people that have ET contact or abduction experiences or meet fairies, but then repress the memory in themselves and don't have the ability to recall it unless they have hypnotic regression or something like that. And they go back about their lives as if nothing changed or nothing happened. I wonder how many people out there have had really unexplainable, weird things happen to them that they just make themselves forget. But overall, if I was going to say like, what is the biggest red pill to take for me that took the longest to finally digest was the notion that government itself and the control systems of the world are absolutely corrupt, that the word government etymologically means mind control, and that taxation is slavery, and that pretty much everyone that's in what we are referring to as the Matrix is allowing their fear that they need someone else to be in charge to control them to the point that they allow basically whatever to be done to them by the collective at the loss of their own individuation as a being. And yeah, I mean, that's something that not a lot of people really want to go that far with their red pill, to say that actually the nature of the universe is anarchy, but chaos isn't evil, that chaos is actually the thing that evolves us. It kind of relates to the I Ching talk about later, now that I'm describing it, but that anarchy is the natural state we're already in. If you look at nature, it's in a state of anarchy. If you look at nation states themselves in the global chessboard, Russia, the United States, China, every little country out there, if it's a sovereign country, then if you treated each sovereign country as like an individual person in the way that they interact with each other, it's anarchy already. But it works out all right. The world hasn't ended, even despite the fact that these are very corrupt players on the global chessboard. So to me, I'm waiting for the day where people don't even remember what the word government means, when we can get so dialed into our own nature and that we are supported by the entire nature of the universe itself, that when we're in the flow of life and trust and love of all things together in unity, then there's no need for external controllers at all. And I guess the last thing I'll say about it is that a very true occult law or a natural law principle is that the more personal individual sovereignty you have over your own choices, as in you choose for yourself and you're decisive in every way about what you do, and the more you choose, right or moral action for yourself, then the more external freedom you have from the world. So like internal sovereignty equals external anarchy. But if you have no internal sovereignty, if you're internally in a state of anarchy, as in you have no self-control, no willpower, no ability to stop yourself from doing things that harm yourself or others, then you have external tyranny applied to you. So it's like this inverse relationship. The more you can control yourself, the less anything can control you. And the less you control yourself, the more external things can control you. It's not so much about control like forcing yourself to do this or that. It's actually the natural state of things to just like be cool to each other, to not hurt yourself, to not hate yourself. And it's the fear that we need to have these mental structures and this psychic armoring between us and the world, and that we're this island, that allows us to do the heinous shit that we do to ourselves and to each other. So that's the ultimate red pill for me. Well, there's probably deeper ones, like you said, maybe it's all a simulation.
Well, you know, it's neat. And I think kind of a lot of people, we all kind of feel this to a certain extent, but we approach it in very different ways. So for example, like I kind of look at it in terms of tarot, actually, because you have the Empress and the Emperor. What you were talking about are natural selves, even the kind of like anarchist self being represented by the Empress. She is like the natural world. But then you have the Emperor, which is society, dominance, government. And I've always believed that, we know, personally, I believe that we don't need to abolish society, but we need to create a much better balance between the two. And that's something that's been really out of balance. Nowadays, we have way too much society, too much control, and too much suppression of ideas and thoughts, and not enough nature, you know, and that's part of the root cause. But people approach it in different ways. Like for me, you know, I'm pretty like girly. So when I think about this kind of stuff, I've become a lot more minimalist lately. I'm trying to cut down on my shopping, trying to like stop giving my money to people that I don't necessarily want them to have my money. And there's a huge movement, I don't know if you guys are aware, but just kind of among guys and girls, moving towards that, like zero waste living, being more of a minimalist, intentional living. And that's kind of one way to approach this kind of trying to get out of the matrix. But there's so many different ways that people approach these ideas. But what I think underpins it all is that we kind of really feel that we're on the wrong track, regardless of politics or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter where you're coming from. I think that is reaching a lot of people. And in your perspective, I find it really fun and very idealist, and not necessarily a bad way, but like really kind of reaching in once we kind of uncover our true selves, our true kind of universal consciousness, perhaps, maybe we can enter a completely new society, something we've never experienced before. It's just, how do we get there without killing each other? That's the tricky part.
Yeah. And there's always going to be interdependence. That's the nature of life itself. All the cell walls of the cells of your body are all touching each other and connected. And humanity is much the same way. But just saying that we're going to take away external controllers and coercive elements of society doesn't mean we're going to take away social harmony. We're actually going to increase social harmony by taking the coercion out of it, out of the equation. So one thing that I equate anarchy with is chaos. And so whenever I talk about anarchy, I always have to throw that in there, that it has nothing to do with throwing out the rules. It has everything to do with getting rid of the rulers. And when you mentioned like millennials wanting to be more eco-conscious, which is, I think, a really important thing as well, but it's never going to be mandated from the top down successfully. But they want you to think that it can be mandated from the top down. But what it'll actually turn into is more draconian laws that take away your freedoms, like, and put a tax on the air you breathe at some point. And we don't want that. So what I love about the festival community, just to throw back to that, is I can think of like 5 different shops right now, people that I know personally that travel the country selling handmade clothing and accessories and things like that, that do it all with zero textile waste and use recycled fabrics, or import the fabrics from people that they know in like Guatemala or a whole bunch of different ways. And that's where we're going to see the greatest effective change, is when people decide for themselves, okay, I'm not going to be wasteful anymore. I'm not going to be destructive anymore. I'm going to do this myself, not because there was a law that said I had to. The more laws you put on things, I don't know if anyone else is like this, but as soon as like my mom tells me not to do something or I have to do something, I'm like, no, whatever you said, I'm doing the opposite.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's when I think about the festival culture, I mean, even Burning Man is like the ultimate example, even though I've never been. And even though other festivals are pretty far removed from like the hardcore Burning Man style, but it's kind of like they've got this like circus vibe, this like traveling circus. So they've got this sort of like pirate vibe. You're sort of just like a pirate out there, just like, you know, like living on your own outside of the system and sort of like foraging your way and making do with what you've got to be an outsider by choice and to have like true freedom and everything. And I wanted to ask you, Chance, too, because when you were talking about festivals, you talked about crystals and stuff like that. And it gets me thinking, you know, like I mentioned that I would go to jam band shows and go to festivals and stuff like that, you know, I guess in the 2000s when I was in high school or college. And, you know, back then, long before I ever would use the term magic or witchcraft, you know, there was crystals and stuff. And I was kind of like, how do crystals work? And I remember this girl's like, they're basically just like magic. And when she said magic, I was like, well, that's not real. Like, it's fake. But like, and now that the witchy thing or the, you know, occult thing is so big, it's like, well, that was all happening in the festivals long before this stuff was ever considered mainstream. So I guess I'm wondering, Chance, like, where does the witchy world and the festival world or like hippie world intersect? Like, I don't know what you think about the word hippie, but like, how does like hippie festival stuff relate to this like witchy modern day sort of occult stuff? And is it all sort of becoming one thing now?
The convergence is in the individual, I believe. And that's what makes this interesting, but also what makes it so lopsided and disjointed. Some communities have a very strong magical or occult vibe to them at festivals, and other festivals are really, as far as the production or the coordination of the festival goes, just about throwing a really cool party. But maybe the individuals that come to the party bring a lot of the esoteric elements to it. The convergence, I think, as far as on a practical level, is that whenever you're, you know, raging multi-day outdoor camping festival, dancing every day, possibly doing psychedelics, which, by the way, I'll just throw out there that I don't even recommend doing psychedelics at festivals. I recommend, if you're interested, to take that exploration in a more reserved setting or a more nature-oriented setting. Not saying don't do it. I'm just not saying to do it as far as festivals go. Because there's yin and yang at the festivals. There's people there for all kinds of intentions, regardless of the overall intention of the people throwing the festival. But when you're, like I said, whenever you're doing all that stuff, you're exerting a lot of energy, you're putting some strain on your body, it's only natural that you're going to be like, oh, okay, there's this yoga workshop over here. I don't normally do yoga, but maybe it will help me get through this day if I do some yoga. That workshop, the instructor might, you know, talk about cosmic consciousness and help you tap into the fact that you're everything and everything is you. And who knows, it might take several seeds like that to be planted, and it might take the right environment of your own personal life. Like maybe you have to hit a low point before you're ready to sprout those seeds. The seeds need to get pretty deep into the soil, right? But at some point, just being exposed to the eclectic people and the variety of ideas in the, especially the transformational festival community, and with some musical artists and some visual artists in the, those worlds, the visionary ones, you're also taking in their symbolic elements to your subconscious directly. So all of that is like fertilizer to the seeds that have been planted. And yeah, eventually it'll just start to sprout. I've had friends that remain kind of like hardcore materialist, and they even go through amazing synchronicities that I'm there for. And so I know that they're witnessing them. And they don't change, their life doesn't change, to be kind of repressed and depressed and stuck in the matrix. But then one day something snaps and they're like calling me up and saying, yeah, I had this crazy experience. I decided to try meditating and I felt my energy and my crown chakra start to activate and whatever. And I'm just like, yeah, see all those seeds. People were talking to you about chakras and you're like, oh, I don't care about that, but you were still learning about it. So I think there's a lot of value to the community for that reason as well, that the individual is given the chance to sort of like MMA style, take what works for them and use it and leave the rest. And like I said, exposure, you can get a contact high off of a lot of things, and crystals are one of them. I first became aware of my own personal internal chi or energy, not knowing even what to call it or how to describe it, just from picking up a selenite crystal at someone's booth one time. And away I went. It kind of got messy actually, because I started practicing like Reiki style energy work, but not realizing that I had to be aware of what I took in from other people. And I had no energetic hygiene at that time. And sort of started to get a little bit sick from being not having the right boundaries up with my energy and not having the right cleansing practices. But even that led to me learning about energy hygiene, because a sensitive person saw me walking by carrying this big hunk of selenite, waving it around like a wizard. And they're like, hey, come over here. And I just walked over to them. This is an electric forest festival. And she's like, you've been doing a lot with that, haven't you? And she points at my crystal. I'm maybe paraphrasing, but something like that. And I'm like, yeah, I've found out that I can give people energy massages with it. And she's like, well, are you grounding yourself? I mean, it doesn't seem like you're very grounded. You're jittery. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And she's like, take off your shoes right now. She had me take off my shoes and socks. So I was like grounding with the earth itself. And then she basically did some sort of improvised incantation and with sage and like grounded me right then and there. And it was amazing because there were some pains that were starting to happen in certain parts of my body and in the sacral chakra, especially, that were like getting worse and worse. And I was like, why is this hurting? Am I going to have to go to a doctor? What's happening to me? And, you know, the worst part of my imagination was like, you've got cancer. But this person did this grounding for me, and I felt the pain in the chakras literally dissolve and flow out through my feet into the ground. And I was like, what just happened? And she gave me a little bit of a lesson on how you need to actually treat your own energy whenever you're opening up chakras, that you need to also, just like you got to take a shower in real life, you also need to, on purpose in some way or another, cleanse and clear and ground the energy that you take on from others. And that definitely goes for festival community, because the chakras are getting opened there for sure, depending on what you're doing, more times than others. And like I mentioned, there's people of all types of intentions. They're good and bad. I mean, I've encountered dark occultists at music festivals before. I've encountered people that use mind control. I've encountered people that attach entities onto other people just for fun or to mess with them or to try to get something from. It's rare, and most others don't even know what they're witnessing, but it's you gotta sort of protect yourself whenever you get into this expanded realm. And that's part of the sovereignty thing, is that you can't just willy-nilly be all yes. Like yin and yang means yes and no.
Yeah, on that note, when you said that there's like dark occultists at festivals, I think some of them are on stage sometimes.
I know that for sure.
Because I swear, yeah. Okay, so like a few years ago, and I guess I won't say the name of this artist, but he was one of the main headliners, very recognizable name, at North Coast Festival a few years ago. And me and my cousins were there, and we were like, what is going on in this crowd? People literally look like they're possessed by demons. They're having like convulsions, and the music sounds like intentionally negative, and it's almost like they're intentionally like opening a portal to hell or something.
And on the screen, they'll be putting all kinds of like symbolism and dark stuff on the screen, and demonic looking stuff.
Yeah. And we were like, what, like, is he intentionally opening a demon portal? Like, what the hell is going on? And we even kind of read some of the reviews of the festival, like saying the exact same thing. And we were like, you know, in festival mode. So we were in a heightened state, I'll say. But the minute you said that, I'm like, and that's another one of my critiques of, you know, the festival culture is like, I've seen it since, you know, like the mid to early 2000s, when it was just like jam bands. But now this, like a lot of this electronic music, it's like disorienting and makes you sort of like, you see the crowd and you see the way people are dancing. I'm like, you look like you are like possessed by like an AI demon or something. Like, it's really creepy, but I just wanted to get that in there.
Well, we can go even one step further and say, like, how do artists that have music that makes you feel bad and it's not even that technically good, how do they even get onto a main stage in front of 30,000 people? And I think it's not that different than the way that we saw certain characters become pop culture icons in the previous decades. If you ask me, secret society networks are alive and well influencing our culture. And the bigger the event that you go to, as far as music festivals go, the more likely that in some way the people invested in throwing that festival have an intention that involves harvesting your energy somewhere, whether it's financially or worse. And that's maybe more conspiratorial than people want to like accept or believe, but I've witnessed the same thing that you're describing several occasions. And what I think is so great about getting into conspiracy research, especially when it comes to looking at occult symbolism and how symbolism is used as a method of mind, is that once you bring awareness to what it is you're seeing, you immediately create psychic community to the effect. And that's the reason why I want to talk about this kind of thing, is that I want people to really, especially if you're listening and you're a festival lover, you go to a lot of shows, just don't just take in the music or the art or the other people with complete openness. I'm not saying don't be open. I'm saying use discernment, like where, like be there with it and look at it for what it is and go, how does this really make me feel? Not I'm having a great time because everyone around me is having a great time. Like what is it doing for you? And just make that decision for yourself if it's energy that you want to integrate. And even if you're somewhere where there's like, I don't know, what I usually do whenever I get the deep satanic vibe off of a person on the main stage is I typically will just dip and not even stay for that show. But sometimes I might do energy practices myself to like create a little bubble around the space or in some way in the psychic space negate what is happening for as much of the group as I can. And that's a little more personal type of, I guess, magic and very subjective. But if it makes you feel better and not like that you're getting infected with satanic STDs, then I don't know.
Well,
then do it. But it's a weird question.
Yeah. I think it's good to distinguish, like, you know, I'm not saying that anything with a dark vibe is that bad, because even like with the Grateful Dead,
right,
that's beautiful sort of like spiritual music that raises your vibration. But then they sort of, when they're jamming out, they go to a dark place. And if the crowd is on psychedelics, they like go to a dark place with them. And it's like, honestly, like shadow work. And then they take you out of that dark zone back to the light. And you're like, so I'm not saying like everything has to be lovey dovey, but I will say,
for sure,
some of this electronic music that's at these festivals is literally like disorienting, like MK Ultra weird, like it's like sonic harassment. And when people are there on drugs, like an open book, like when you walk out of there, you're like carrying some nasty vibes with you. So I just want to drive home, it's okay to like get dark in the musical space, especially the shadowy, like inner darkness. But when there's a difference between that and being like harassed by some creepy, like disorienting garbage music. So
I've actually seen music producers that craft sigils into the waveform of the actual song. So like if you were looking at it in whatever editing tool they created the music through, the structure of the song and the way the notes and the different tracks are laid out will literally create sigils or certain symbols when you look at it all zoomed out. And that can go either way, as far as it's all about the intention being put into it. But that's just, I'm just making the point that like music is frequency, everything is frequency, and your biology tends to adjust itself to be in resonance with the frequency around it. And so if you don't have a strong enough aura, and that comes from just like being in good health and being very present and not having a lot of mental baggage distracting you from actually perceiving empathetically your connection to whatever the environment is, sonically or otherwise, you know, you need that connection, I guess. You need that empathy for your own self, like to know how you actually feel about a thing, to have some sort of sovereignty over whether or not your personal vibe is going to be changed or not, or integrate with something that's external that's happening. So it's very interesting. All of this though is why I prefer festivals in like the 3,000 to 5,000 people range and not the mega ones that you end up waiting in a ton of lines and you have to camp 3 miles from the event. And there's so many stages and so much going on that you can only do 1/5 of it. But the ticket price is as if you were going to see it all. I like also festivals of the smaller size. Nobody tends to die. And I appreciate that, because I don't like hearing about all the people that died at a big festival I was at. It's weird. It's like humanity is the same as locusts. You know, the Beatles hit a certain amount of population density in a region, and then they swarm instead of acting normally. I think humanity has a tendency to sometimes swarm whenever there's too many. It's kind of a subjective line. I think maybe we could push that boundary out further and further. The more awakened and aware individuals we have, the more of us can come together in one place without that sort of mass hysteria, swarming type of behavior.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I'm curious to hear your opinion on, and it's kind of like a darker presence that I've been noticing with festivals, but a completely different kind, is the technocrats and like the social media culture kind of co-opting festivals like Burning Man, that used to be much more of an artistic community, is now getting, you know, outpriced because so many, you know, techie people are coming in. And of course, Coachella is like the ultimate example of festival theater, basically. They don't go to see the music. It's not about the community or the music anymore. It's just about getting the
right. They go for the Instagram pictures.
Right, exactly. So do you think this is like a wider trend? This is going to be happening more and more and eventually phase out some of the more wholesome festival culture aspects? Or do you think it's, you know, there's always going to be a good place for festivals like you've been talking about that you enjoy? What are your thoughts on that?
It's a complicated question. There is a festival artist and musician. He does live painting, and he's also an amazing solo act, live looping guitarist, a guy named Michael Garfield. I had him back on the 100th episode of my show, so it was like a monumental one for me. And I loved talking to him. And one of the ideas that he expressed in his writing that I found so interesting, he's also a writer, is that festivals themselves are a symptom of the disassociation we have from ourselves and from one another and from nature and the environment. In that the very notion that we all need to travel to one place at a certain time and all congregate just to make cool shit happen, just to express ourselves, just to have fun, just to connect and be fearless and open ourselves up to one another, that itself is a symptom, I guess, because in a more, I don't know, I don't want to say natural, because human nature is whatever it is becoming in that moment, but in a more balanced version of humanity, I think we have this type of celebratory attitude towards life every day. And in fact, one of the big realizations I made from going to festivals was that life itself is just like a music festival. You come at it your own time. Like, your body is sort of like your tent. You camp with the people that you want to camp with. You don't get to go to every show, but you go to some, and then you leave. I think that the festival experience is like a microcosm of a life experience, an incarnation experience, because you'll meet people that have a strange soul level familiarity to you that reminds you of someone from a different festival across the country. Like, it's the same soul in two different bodies, or like you would have the experience of reincarnating and meeting a different version of the same person. And I don't know. I think that overall the goal should be for humanity to create a living situation for itself that's more biological and that has more just general free time and leisure time to make cool stuff and to show it to each other and to let art be more of a currency than something that has no actual value, because all value is subjective. One of the things that I love about festivals is the subculture of hat pins and trading pins. This is something that I got into for a while. People will create little graphic images of a band they like, or a joke that combines cartoon characters with, you'll have like Stewie Griffin dressed up like Hunter S. Thompson or something like that. There's a million pins out there, and the creators will usually only make like 100 of the design that they make. And so they become a commodity that is traded and bought at music festivals all over the place. And I think that is a really cool example of a new form of currency that's emerging organically in that space that's not got a top-down control. Because I have a couple pins that if I found the right person, they'd give me $100 for it. And it's just a little piece of metal made in China for like 30 cents. But it's because there's no other ones like it. It's because there's the person that made it, they think is cool, or they something about the design really speaks to them, or for whatever reason, they have an invested personal subjective value in that thing that would make it really awesome if they got it. And so, you know, you can trade pins for lunch at the right food vendors. And I think that's so cool. I think that's what I mean as an example of art becoming our currency. Because if we're going to be entering a more technological age, which it seems like we are, and a more spiritual age, as Pisces has got Neptune in it now, and will for a while. And I think that is a real possibility. It's really plausible that humans won't really need the whole marketplace system we currently have to keep ourselves sustained. I think that if we create the right, like I said, biologically appropriate living situations for ourselves, then getting the resources we need to maintain ourselves, if we could do all that locally and in small groups without the need for any like top-down distribution or control, then we naturally wouldn't need much of the whole currency thing anyway anymore. And we'd have more time to create art. And maybe that art could be a real token of exchange and a real thing of value. And it's like it came from the bank of chance. Like I used to make some hat pins. I have a few out there that would now be, I guess, considered rare because they've been sold out for ages. And maybe the right person has been looking for one of the pins I made for years, and they come across it and trade something valuable for it. But to them, it was like an amazing moment because they were wanting that. And I haven't made enough pins that's very likely, but it's possible. And there's definitely people out there that have made an entire living off of creating hat pins and having like a Facebook group. And whenever the new design drops, they post it in the group and the people fight to get the first 100, and then they start auctioning them off to each other after that. And it gets crazy. But I just love those little diverging paths in the festival community, because to me, they look like the budding up of an organic new system of exchange and of art being a higher level of importance, even just for fun art that doesn't even necessarily have like this deeper earth-shattering significance. It's just like, I really love hat pins that portray Hey Arnold or whatever it is. And that's an individual person's thing. I just like that a lot.
Yeah. It just reminds me again of the whole circus traveling road show. Like because, you know, I think of jam bands, and it's all started with the Grateful Dead back in the day. But, you know, if you're in the parking lot of a show or a festival, it's like a barter system, and there's lots of different items being exchanged or bartered for, whether it's a ticket, a t-shirt, a crystal, food, merchandise, drugs. It's like, and people are sort of like following this band around on tour, or just, you know, it gives you an avenue to, or it gives you an excuse also to travel the country. And when people would go on tour with bands like Grateful Dead or even like Fish or Widespread Panic or, you know, a jam band, you get to do this adventure, and you sustain yourself like sort of piggybacking off of the band. And it's totally like an anarchist sort of way of living, and it's almost like a gypsy way of living. And it seems like there is just automatically, there has to be something spiritual about it, or just more human about it than really being plugged into the matrix and really being, you know, stuck in one spot.
Yeah, it's very in the moment. It's like, it's all about getting into the show to see that position that you love so much. And to a degree, the idea that we have like one person on stage that's the king of the sound and everybody is like directing their attention towards that person, it has some elements of like almost like savior worship or messiahship type of thing, kind of maybe outgrowth of Christianity itself. We have this big psychological downfall as human beings that not only do we project our shadow onto each other and see negative attributes we hide from perceiving in ourselves, and we judge them for that. But we also do the thing in reverse and project our positive shadow onto people and say, wow, they're the best guitarist in the world. I could never be that good. And I worship them for what they do. But all that's keeping you from being that good is the time that person put in that you didn't. So I don't like that about festivals, that you kind of worship the stage, but also I do there, and like in the right environment, the vibe is just so cool and unified, and you see the energy ripple through the entire crowd at once if you're observing from a slightly higher perspective. And it's cool. I don't know how else to describe it. It's cool to have everybody joined in ecstatic dance and just not caring about what other people think of them for a moment, and just being so happy that they're where they are. So like everything, it's yin and yang. And I think the best artists are the ones that absorb all that energy from the crowd and then reflect it back to the crowd like a big mirror. And then the ones that are more vampiric, like we kind of touched on, tend to just like suck all of the energy of the crowd into themselves like this void. And what is left is just like darkness, because the light got all absorbed. But that really is more rare. I think with just a little bit of discernment, or just following how it makes you feel, you'll know what music is doing what to you at a festival. It's not something to like go in all apprehensive about. It's just this, if you notice that you don't like the vibe of where you're around, even if your friends like it, go do something else, because your friends can almost be like a chain around your ankles that you're, you know, tied to each other when you're at places like that. You get so invested in having experiences with these people you already know that you ignore all the people around you that could be, they could be anybody, man. They could be your new best friend.
Yeah. One last note here on festivals that I find interesting. In Chicago, it's not quite a music festival, but it's very kind of spur of the moment, organic creation is the Moon Jams we have mm-hmm. here. And this is something that's been around for, I guess, a few years, but I only first heard about these a couple years ago, even though I've been in the city for around 6-7 years. And what it is basically every full moon here in the city by the lake, people just gather, and then people bring their drums, people bring their instruments, and they kind of just have a jam session. And then there's fire dancers, and it's kind of this very organic, artistic community that just kind of springs up for the full moon and then disbands and comes back next month. So it is kind of neat seeing that even here in our own city in a way. So I'm glad to see that there are these kind of communities out there that are creating these kind of alternative spaces, so areas to explore a different way of living, a different way of experiencing music in the world. So that's really neat. As we're wrapping up our conversation here for today, can you tell our listeners a bit about where they can find you and where they can listen to your podcast?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. So you can find Interverse anywhere on the internet that has podcasts, basically. I try to make it available as widely as possible, but interversepodcast.com is a good bet, because you'll see links right at the top to all the different types of podcast players and platforms. So you can get it on iTunes, SoundCloud, YouTube, alternative places like BitChute. I'm on a lot of social media as well, Steemit, Minds.com. I'm on this one I really like called Eureka.org that a friend of mine has created. That's a very free speech oriented and heart centered type of community. He would probably be a cool guest for you guys as well. His name's Yura Soul. At least he goes by Yura Soul. He doesn't use his real name online. So I also have got, let's see, what other platforms? Google Play, Spotify. It's all over the place. So the best way to get Interverse is to actually go become a member on Patreon. I have a similar deal to you guys. I think it's a really good model for podcasters, because I don't do any advertising at all. I kind of don't like that whole time theft, holding you hostage to tell you about something that you weren't looking for type of thing. And so I completely fund my operation from listeners that subscribe. You get a second hour of the show, unless I don't get a second hour recorded. And I aim to get out an episode a week, but sometimes, you know, I'm also in that 9-to-5 grind and I don't always do the best job of scheduling my time and making contact with guests to get a show out every week. So any of my audience out there that's listening and is like, where have our episodes been this last month? I'm sorry about that, but I've been locking in the schedule much more consistently for the rest of the year. And I hope to be prolific with podcasts for a long time. And I'd love it if you guys came and checked it out, because it's a lot like this, although I'm the one asking the questions and I try to make as much room for the guests to talk as I can. But I really appreciate the time that you guys gave me here to express some things that are interesting to me. I love all the things we talked about, and it's been a while since I got to air out my thoughts on these subjects with receptive people in a long format. So it was very refreshing to me and a lot of fun, and I look forward to when I get to turn the tables on you guys for an episode of Interverse in a couple of weeks. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Chance, for coming on. And to our listeners, definitely check out Interverse. Like, I'm a huge fan. And Chance, I mean, you're more of an anarchist than us, which is cool. Or you're more like, I love when you talk about, you know, that really alternative lifestyle, or you talk to people that are really off the grid and out of the matrix. And I think that's inspiring for anybody that has any type of spiritual pursuit, you know. So to our listeners, check out Interverse. And thanks again, Chance, for being on our show.
Thanks.
Alrighty, folks. Thanks for making it to the end of our episode today. We talked with Chance for a whole extra hour on this episode, all about the I Ching. And he gave a nice free mini lesson on the entire system of the I Ching. So that was really fun to keep talking with Chance. We kind of had two different conversations, one about festivals, one about the I Ching. So our Patreons get the I Ching extension this time, which did go for about an extra hour. So like we said in the intro, if you like our content and want more, just head on over to patreon.com/cosmickeys. And for just $5 a month, you will get our extensions. Other than that, enjoy your Ace of Cups week. Like I said, too, it's one of my favorite cards. And, you know, you can't really go wrong with good, nice, flowy emotions. So, now that the gnarliness is behind us, I really hope you can wash yourself clean with this Ace of Cups action. And, yeah, until next time, guys, have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Take care.